Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn. Joining me today is youth pastor, former teacher, Josh Moore. Josh, how are you doing today?
Good.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's nice to do an in-person interview here in my office. You are close by here in Washington.
So yeah.
You made the little trek to experiencing the farm life for a moment. So in all of its glory and mud and flooding.
Yeah, especially in the rain. It's always
yes.
fun.
Yes, that's Washington for us right here. It is cold and rainy. So, but today we are going to talk about public education.
Yeah.
And you have gone on a journey of being a teacher in a Christian school, yep. public schools, and now you call it quits and you are a youth pastor.
That's
and
accurate.
So you've invested in kids in a variety of contexts. And, you know, we want to talk about some of the issues that going on in public schools. What parents should be aware of, what teachers should fight back on.
Totally.
And I don't just want to be an alarmist, you know, and just always be, harping on people. You know, I've had enough, you know, fights with librarians recently.
Yeah, you're saying you had some fun stuff coming
yes,
your way.
Yes, I know. So the depraved librarians. But within the public school system, I feel like it's more of a mixed bag. There's
totally.
Amazing people, but there's also serious, serious issues.
For sure.
Not only here in Washington, but a lot of other places. And so tell us a little bit your journey. Like, what's your background? How did you end up in a variety of those places within education?
Yeah, good question. So I went to public elementary school, and then in junior high and high school, went to Christian school. It was good. I did not have any negative experiences in elementary. It was really good. But then in high school, started figuring out that growing up in a Christian home, my faith had to become my own. And so being at a Christian school was really helpful to be able to learn a lot of that stuff. And then it wasn't until college where I actually felt like really understood what it meant to be a Christian. And in that experience, I went to one of the most liberal schools in Washington, learning as I grew. And it was actually really, really encouraging for me. Not necessarily the interactions that I had, but the way I had to grow in my faith. I was plugged in with a super great church that discipled me and my wife really well and cared for us. And through that experience, I really grew in ways that I hadn't up to that point. After that, my wife and I got married and went to Africa to teach for a year and then landed back up in Bothell, taught up there for 4 years, and then came down and taught in the public schools for the last five. So it was a great experience. Really thankful for the way the Lord opened doors and brought us to where we are. So
absolutely. And so, but last year's your last year teaching,
yeah.
and now you are youth pastor. How did that happen?
Yeah, good question. A lot of thoughts. Actually, 2 years ago, when the first conversation about this happened, we said no. We saw God doing some really cool things in the public school where I was at, through Young Life and just relationships through coaching in other places. And so we really wrestled through, is God calling us away from being a teacher or is it time to just really focus on being here? And we were really content. And then again, the conversation came up and it was a hard one. We spent months trying to decide what we wanted to do, whether we wanted to stay in the public school or come over and be do youth stuff at our church. So it was not a quick, easy decision. I think we made lists that were probably pages long of pros and cons from both sides. And eventually we landed on just being excited about what God's doing in the local church and being able to equip kids to be in whatever context they are in to love the Lord. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's awesome. I want to talk about some specific issues within public schools. And one of those is the very strong agenda on the side of LGBTQ totally. Being pushed. And, you know, a lot of my listeners are here in Washington. Some of them are not. And, you know, I think that no place is immune by this because sure. I think in other places it's just happening very secretly
totally.
And, you know, I have friends in Kearney, Nebraska, who have really had to work hard to try to get, you know, LGBTQ pornographic books out of their school libraries, and I don't think they've been successful. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're trying to fight the fight there too. I think that, you know, the culture I grew up in that's still more present in the Midwest is that public school is just normal, and that's what everyone does.
For sure.
And you know, grew up, it was only kind of the weird people who did homeschooling, right?
Totally.
And then, you know, after we got married, our friends in Wyoming did a lot of classical education, homeschool co-ops, and they were still a little bit on the fringes.
For sure.
But here, one thing that's encouraging is that it seems like for all of our Christian friends, it's like public school isn't even an option, right? Like it's not, they don't even have to wrestle with it. It's just not something that they would do. Mm-hmm. And there's so many resources for other types of education, Christian schools, homeschooling, you know, the classical conversations, sure. School co-ops, and there's so many options to give families some really great options to where parents can be in charge of their child's education and disciple their kids. And that's just the standard and the norm. And I think that a lot of my friends in the Midwest, if you're listening from Nebraska, really need to catch up you know, understand that public education does not have to be the default or the only option.
Totally. Yeah, we're actually navigating that conversation with our five-year-old, what he's going to do next year for school. We're trying to figure out what we're going to do. When I was a teacher in the public school, I felt like, and we felt like we could kind of choose some of the paths that we were going to put our kids through. And so we were planning on putting them through the public school. There's just a lot of things that if you're not aware of kind of where the schools are at, you're going to be blindsided by things that are happening. And it does give you so much more control. And I think growing up similar, like I did not know many public or homeschool families that were doing school really, really well. And it seemed like a lot more loosey-goosey than what you'd expect. Yeah. So
it was kind of like, oh, my parents taught us at home and they didn't actually teach us.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
It was more the rebellion of, you know, just not valuing education instead of actually valuing a wonderful, deep education. And I feel like that's what resources like Classical Conversations do. Like they provide a robust, well-rounded, wonderful education that actually teaches kids how to think.
Yeah.
And so there's some really great options. So I want to talk about a couple of news articles from Washington recently of things that have happened in the public schools, and then get your thoughts on how you see that playing out. And there's probably a lot of things that I'm not aware of. You know, when you said that you saw what kids have to deal with in public schools, we want to hear it. And so, but, you know, in my area of ministry with LGBTQ issues, a couple of things in the news recently, it just came out, I think last week, the Puyallup School District, which is just down the road from us, really close to you. Were you teaching in Puyallup
School? I was teaching in Puyallup.
So you were in Puyallup Schools. Yep. And so there had been this girl, 16 years old, who had gone missing from her parents like 2 months ago. And they had no idea where she was, if she's dead or alive, had no idea what was happening. And the school pretended like they didn't know either. And it turns out she had, I would call it grooming, like these LGBTQ activists who convince her that she's transgender. And the school district had helped get her guardianship handed over to a random stranger she'd met on the street who was an LGBTQ activist and were hiding her. And that school helped with that and then lied about it. And so the parents spent 2 months thinking their child was actually missing when people in the public school and others, like there's the state helped with this, knew where she was. And they had convinced her she was transgender. They had connected her with transgender clinics that were only available like during the day that she was going to during school hours secretly. And with the help of people within the public schools. And to me, that is just an egregious, horrible, horrible situation.
Totally.
There's another one that just came out in the last week. It was a different school district here in Washington, but they had like as part of their daily schedule, this time slot of like 20, 25 minutes where kids had in their schedule to go to some focused time that was supposed to be to intervene with how, wherever that child needed struggle, whether they're behind on math or in reading. And sounds like a great thing, right? Like you're struggling with one subject, here's an time when you can go to that. And this mom discovered that her child was signed up for one of the math ones, but it was like this secret LGBTQ pride club. And it was even labeled as math on the schedule the parents had seen. But 2 days a week, it was this LGBTQ pride. And her child had been put in that. And he wasn't LGBTQ, but someone was convincing him that he was, and a teacher signed him up for it, and without the parents' knowledge. And it's just, it's horrendous. And I know I you know, I don't want to pretend like that's every teacher is doing those things or every person in the public schools, but that's happening regularly and it's happening secretively. And I think that's one of the biggest problems is that these things are happening secretively. And I have a lot of parents who have dealt with transgender issues with their kids. And what happens is that parents who aren't LGBTQ friendly are labeled as unsafe. And so then the school district intentionally keeps these things and will help their kids transition genders. And so, you know, I've seen that from the outside, from ministering to parents who have had to deal with those situations. So I want to hear what's actually happening on the inside. How have you seen those things play out? What policies did you have to go by, you know, and enforce that you think were unhealthy and good that circumvented the parents? And so like, let's hear it all.
Yeah. I mean, you're dead on. There's definitely policies that lock schools and teachers into really tricky spots, where students are in charge of their information and parents don't get a window into that. And in fact, if you violate that, you've actually gone against some of the policies. So there's one specifically where you're not allowed to use the pronoun that the student uses in school unless they've given you permission to that, do that, unless it's different. And that was the hardest one. I think it was 2 years ago that rolled out in the middle of the year. And there was a lot of teachers that just really struggled. How do we navigate this where we really want to be lights in the dark place, but also recognize that we have an just a really hard spot to try to figure out how to do that in a way that respects the families and cares for the students. That was one point where truly it was a really hard decision. Do we stay in the public school? Is there a way we can navigate this in a way that doesn't violate our conscience or cross into sin? And that was a hard one. The way that I ended up navigating it a lot of the times was using pretty specific they, them kind of generic, or specifically just using their name a whole bunch of times in the email so that I wasn't violating where I felt like the Lord has called me to be honest and true and, true to my conscience. So that was the hardest one. And it's not an individual school thing. And I think that's where we're not always hearing that, but it's a state level legislation, who we put in office. And so one of the schools specifically that's come up in the news recently is where I taught. And it was really hard to hear the school go under fire, but not disagree with anything that was said. Because I know, especially some of the roles that are in the school that were identified, are filled by Christians who love the Lord and struggling and wrestling with the tension of how do you walk this out practically? But to your point of, man, it is not easy. It was a lot of wrestling. There was one summer looking at my roster for the next year, knowing one student specifically who went from a male to a female, gender names, really wrestled through how do I approach this? A lot of prayer, a lot of sleepless nights, and it was tough. That was the kid that I prayed for all year and still pray for, that he would come to know the Lord, and that's not been the result. But that year, I also got to see another kid come to meet the Lord. So it's just an interesting tension of, as you walk that line as a teacher, you also have influence in ways that you uniquely do as a teacher that you wouldn't otherwise.
Absolutely.
So,
Yeah, and so we need, you know, teachers to be in those places and to be a source of light and truth. I think that I personally know some teachers who have kind of given in to the ideology to where it's not they'd say, well, I don't personally believe this, but this is just part of my job. Totally. And it's no longer, they're no longer wrestling or struggling.
For
like
sure.
They've accepted the ideology, kind of like in the world of libraries. I feel like so much of the library world has just accepted the ideology and are defending it. And they'll say, okay, well, I'm a Christian, but I also, for the purpose of literary freedom, I'm going to give pornography to kids. Oh. And his, and their ideology of has been so far swayed. And so we should want teachers to wrestle, right? Mm. Because we should want them to not be okay with this.
Yep.
I know that it's different in different states. And here it's statewide. There's like state laws that are pushing teachers, you know, sure. and schools to do this. In other places where I have listeners, it's more of a district-wide circumstance. And it's not being pushed by the states, but it's still there within certain school totally. Districts. And so,
and it's helpful to recognize education, the unions also push it.
Oh, yes.
There's a so huge
I want to talk
swing
about,
on that. Yeah.
Like teachers' unions are, I think, are horrendous.
Yeah,
I don't understand how they have so much power.
So, yeah. yeah.
What was your experience with that? Like, what was teacher unions pushing? How did they kind of control things? I know, like, during COVID, so it was the unions behind keeping schools closed down
for
so
sure.
much. And,
yep.
like, they're pushing LGBTQ issues. I know the Washington Education Association has, like, workshops for teachers that are full of LGBTQ indoctrination and how to push it on the kids.
Yeah, 100%. I really appreciated things that the union did for us as teachers, but also really pushed back at some points with some things that they also added in. So when schools were shut down, one of the emails that I sent was, why are we shutting schools down when you haven't asked the teachers what we actually think? And so I think there's a challenge there from their perspective of, we can't always ask them what they think because we're gonna have different opinions, but also asking is actually really helpful. So I was close to leaving the union. I know other teachers who have left the union because they represent some, but not everyone. But they push the agenda that they want to, with a lot of financial support that the teachers have to pay to be part of the union, but also are defended when things come that are hard from the district. I was in a situation where the district was trying to do some stuff and the union actually stepped in to help protect me and a huge group of other teachers. And it was really important that the union was there. So it's a weird give and take. I don't think it's perfect at all.
Yeah. And so I know there's so many teachers who do disagree with what the unions are doing. So like,
totally.
Why aren't those teachers helping lead the union? It's like, why don't they have influence over what the union is doing?
For sure.
It's like,
one of the things I found is that for me specifically and a handful of other teachers, the amount of time that you'd have to invest in the union, we didn't have the ability to give with families, with commitments at church.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who did have that time were often the people who didn't have families, didn't have kids. And so they had more ability to speak into those areas, which is a tough one because their voices sometimes usually was the other side of the perspective than we have. So,
yeah. And I think that that's a problem where, you know, I've been talking a little bit more recently about civic engagement, getting like going to your school board meetings and talking kindly.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
You know, we need Christians on local city councils and as policymakers.
Oh.
But it's so hard where those of us who are Christians, we don't have a lot of extra time because we're investing in our churches.
Totally.
And so it's like most of us who are really involved in our churches, we have 2 or 3 evenings a week taken by church stuff.
Totally.
And that's extremely important and we need it. And so it's like, you know, how do I now invest a couple of extra evenings a week to, you know, be involved in local city council and the school board and all these things, but we need Christians in those places. But that's, I don't know what the solution is for that.
Yeah.
But it is hard when, it's one side of it. It seems to be much more represented because they don't have the church commitments. Many of them don't have kids.
Totally.
They're not. And so it's, I just don't know what the solution is, but we need more involvement and we need our voices to be heard in very respectful ways.
Yes.
It's like, it seemed like for a long time, I would kind of cringe when I would see, because I've testified at like state legislatures and places like that before, and so many of the Christians present were a little bit unhinged uninformed.
Totally.
Did not represent Christ very well, would just go off on kind of a rant.
Totally.
But we need Christians who are well-spoken, who are well-prepared, who will speak truthfully, factually, and not just like spout off conspiracy theories, but actually
know
their stuff and be well-prepared. And that's what I encourage people with. But, you know, I don't know if that always makes a difference, because for a lot of local school districts, they have no choice. But I feel like if we were speaking up more, they would be more likely to push back against the powers that be when the community is pushing back.
Totally.
And we need to be paying attention to what's happening.
Totally. And I think you're dead on. The way we push back is really important. Knowing somebody who's in the school right now, who's in a spot where they're receiving a lot of fire, it's not always helpful and respectful. Even from the Christians, knowing that he is a Christian, they're just bashing him specifically versus recognizing that he's in such a hard spot, trying to walk the line of being faithful to the Lord where he's at and actually seeing fruit from that, but also being in a tough spot.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
But don't not speak, like speak up.
Uh-huh.
So,
but as part of that speaking, we need to defend the ones who are trying to be a voice of reason, and we need to walk alongside them and not just, you know, go to war with every public school, you know, employee. But we wanted to love and support the ones who are trying to do the right thing.
Totally. Totally.
You obviously saw LGBTQ indoctrination happening. Like, in what ways did you see that happening?
Yeah, good question.
Was it just embedded in every aspect of school?
Yeah. I mean, from the principal down, there was people in positions that were very pro LGBTQ issues. And you saw the ability they had to speak freely with their opinions on anything, and they would do that from the classroom, whether it was a math classroom or it was an English classroom. Just feel full freedom to push that agenda, where very clearly, if you were a Christian, you didn't have a voice to speak that. And that was the tough piece. Being in homerooms, kind of like you were saying earlier, where we have different topics that we're supposed to cover, getting some of those topics and being like, I can't speak about this in the way that they want me to. So just navigating, how do I speak about it in a way that's respectful and kind and loving, recognizing that every human being, whether they are on the same perspective that I am as a Christian or not, are made in God's image. And so trying to really focus on that piece of the equation, and then also leave open a discussion for, well, these are different lifestyles. I have a different lifestyle than some of you. And so any moment there was like a push to do this, I always was careful to make sure that I explained, and there's another perspective, and this is where I would land, without having to make it too obvious, but also leaving the question that kids could then ask, like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Because that was the window you could then speak, even if you spoke in ways that they disagreed, leaving the room for there to be a conversation that the students initiated, opened the door wide open so you can share anything you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a helpful piece that I finally picked up on and learned to try to do better. And then just give students an opportunity to speak. I found that there was a lot of Christian kids in my classes who, if given the opportunity, would actually represent Christ so well.
Wow, that's amazing.
In ways that I couldn't, from the front of the room, keep my job and just share the gospel. And so intentionally creating spaces for students to do that on a regular basis, and then even talking to them about, how do you do that well in ways that, okay, maybe you spoke a little bit too harshly in that way. I could just come up to them later and say, like, hey, I know where your heart was. Here's maybe a better way to say that. And it was sweet to see them grow in that desire and have respectful conversations. It wasn't always well received, but they actually moved towards that. And I felt like that was a way that I could stay in the public school very, very confidently, struggling through some of these tensions, but also recognizing that God had a purpose in it and was actually using me to do it.
That's awesome.
So
that's awesome. So you're really able to invest in individual students and empower them to share the gospel.
For sure.
And there's, you know, ministries like, you know, Young Life that, you know, are in public schools that can empower you to do that and make a big influence.
Yeah.
I think it's really easy for those of us who just aren't going to send our kids to public school then to no longer care.
Totally.
Right? But we should care.
Oh, please,
because
care.
These are kids in our community. So for those of us who are planning on homeschooling or going to do private school or, you know, homeschooling co-op, like, how like, how should we stay involved in caring about what's going on in the public school and being a source of light? I just don't know what to do. Obviously, we can pray for them.
Please, please pray. I think as a teacher, the times I heard outside people saying that they were praying for me specifically was so encouraging. Encouraging to stay in it when it was dark, when it was really hard. And then I think it's really easy. I saw this when I was teaching in a Christian school, to make it them out there that are in the public schools and almost make it, if you're in the public school, obviously you are, paint whatever picture you want of them. So I just found it very helpful to recognize that there's a spectrum of people in public schools. It's not just all one category that fall into there, but like you had said, there's not always the opportunity for everyone to be able to explore some of those other options, whether it's single family homes where the parent is working all the time and homeschool is not an option, or going to a Christian school. Finding ways to support those families, especially in the church. I think if we as a church make it that this is the only option for Christians to do and not recognize that maybe other people have different convictions on where they land in sending their kids to homeschool versus public school, it can be really easy for those families to feel ostracized. Absolutely. Or as worse Christians, if that makes sense.
And I've known some of those families who really felt ostracized because they were still in public schools and, you know, no one else in their church was. And so I think we need to be cautious about how we talk about that and present that. What I don't want is for parents to stay in public schools just because they're naive about what is going on. Because that I see causing so much damage. Yeah. And then, you know, their kids, they don't realize are, you know, being just indoctrinated and secretly, especially with the gender issues and some of the LGBTQ issues. And then they were naive and they just don't realize it. And so for families who are in public schools, whether by choice or they just have no other options, like, how should parents navigate that with their kids? How can parents stay so aware of what is happening, what's being said, what's going on in their child's heart, who is influencing them? I feel like parents need to probably put in much more work there. And that's just part of discipleship, right? Of discipling our kids. But if your child is out of the house for 8 hours a day,
it's a long time.
That's a long time for them to be absorbing, processing, being taught by people who have beliefs and agendas. And so how do parents come alongside their kids and protect their kids?
It's such a good
question. While doing that?
Yeah, I think doing what you're doing right now, Brady, is great. Like, you're spreading information so parents are informed. Being aware as parents that there is a problem out there. And then asking your kids specifically, like, what are you learning in class? Tell me about some of the areas where you are being pushed as a Christian to believe a different agenda. I think I'm learning this as a parent. It's easy to be either lazy or just not push into the conversation because of time. But also recognizing even those times where I'm pushing in with my preschool kid, that they have thoughts and thoughts that are actually pretty profound at times. And recognizing that those conversations actually do matter. So pushing into those, being involved as much as you can in the school that they go to. I know a lot of parents that choose to be in the public school are super intentional about subbing or being involved with PTA or just going to games. You can see a lot just by observing. Ask the principals questions. It's their job to respond to your emails. And so if they don't, then keep sending them, respectfully asking questions. They may use specific language that kind of is vague, but you're also being a voice to help some of those teachers and your kids be able to not be ignored. But it is hard. Recognize that prayer, as easy as it is to say that we're only doing is we're praying, but recognize that the sovereign God of the world loves our kids enough to actually pursue them. They get to grow in those areas. And then I think the last thing I would say is just make sure you're involved in a local church that biblically believes true doctrine, especially about topics of LGBTQ plus issues. If you're not in a church that's at least talking about it, not talking about it is also a message.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you hear about churches that don't address it.
Oh, absolutely.
It. So, yep.
And I deal with those churches all the time. Obviously, the churches that have me come and talk about it, they're a place where they want to talk about it. So that's great. But, you know, I've ministered to so many families where it just isn't talked about, or it's we make this mistake as Christians. We talk about those hard issues in the home, in the church, as if it's just the world out there.
That's good.
And not like in here, in our own hearts, in our own families, in our own churches. And so, you know, how we disciple our kids is so important. How we, what heart are we building towards sinners, right?
For sure.
And we need to build a culture in our home to where, you know, our kids know that, like, if I'm struggling with this, I can tell my parents.
Totally.
And I've ministered to so many individuals who, you know, growing up, LGBTQ issues were talked about around the dinner table, you know, with the heart of, oh, those sinners out there.
Dude, for
and
sure.
So then your child sits around the dinner table, knowing deep inside, like, oh, that's me who they're talking about. And I obviously can't talk about that.
Sure.
And so then they go off to college and they come out of the closet. And by that point, they're so hard-hearted because they've had 10 years of this growing in this secret and here, like, being filled with shame because they're one of those people that's being talked about. And so we need to build a heart of discipleship in our home. And when we talk about these issues with our kids, make sure that it's like, what attitude are you growing in your kids towards lost sinners? And if your child starts struggling with one of these things, are you going to be the one that they come and talk to because of how you talk about it?
Totally.
And your heart for discipleship and how you engage in your kids' hearts. And I know that sounds overwhelming because so many parents feel like, they didn't grow up with that type of discipleship.
Totally.
And so they're just not equipped. So we need parents to be equipped to disciple their kids.
Totally. And recognize that sin is sin. Like, we all have our own flavor of sin that we struggle with. And as we do that, if we're not repenting to our kids in the ways we sin against them, why would they ever want to repent to us or share the struggles of life? I think one of the things that's so helpful is to remember, if you're not the one talking about it with your kids, somebody else is. And it's probably their friends. It's probably the teachers. It's probably the other people that are influencing them. And who knows what they're going to hear from that.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. We should be at the forefront of the conversation. I did a podcast episode a few weeks ago with Elizabeth Urbanowski, who wrote a really great book. And so for anyone listening, go listen to that podcast. But it's about how to talk to your kids about all these issues.
So,
and it needs to start, it needs to be often, and it needs to start early and at age-appropriate levels. You know, I have so many parents who will ask, like, how do I have the talk with my kids? It's like, you don't have the talk with your kids.
Sure.
You have thousands of talks with your kids about relationships and God's design and our fallen sinful nature and desires that need to be repented of and surrendered. And like, that starts from a young age. So then, as they're seeing these messages in the world, they already are equipped to process them and have categories for them and to know the truth. And so I think we wait and generally way too long to have those conversations, especially if your kids are going to be in public schools and exposed to these messages from such a young age.
Totally. And I think the other side of the spectrum is, as homeschool families, sometimes we think we build this bubble around them that is never going to get popped by anything, so we don't have to talk about it. It's like, oof, they're going to find out about it somewhere. When we were teaching in Africa, we were blown away by a little third or fourth grader, I'm trying to remember, who got caught with a bunch of his buddies watching porn on his phone in Africa. We're like, okay, wait a second, technology, what's going on here? But like, the reality is, it is so prevalent and is so easy for kids to access. Whether we think we set up the best boundaries or not, kids are really resourceful.
Yes. Like, our hearts are so deceitful. And when our heart is desiring sin, we will go to great lengths
to
try to find it and do it secretly, because we know that this is wrong and shameful. And that's where I have so many parents who just were naive to their kids, you know, struggles with pornography. And, you know, I think some of that being naive would come from, it's like, oh, no, we've taught our kids wrong from right. But our heart is so deceitful. And And so you see pornography for the first time, and your heart is hooked, and there's this shame aspect to where you go into hiding.
For sure.
And you're just hiding this. I don't know if I've ever shared this on podcast before, but when I was a teenager and really dealing with porn, so no, my parents were just kind of naive. We had our first computer in our basement in my room, which was a mistake. And the dial-up internet, you know, that would like screech in your ear.
Yeah.
And just my parents had no idea what I had access to.
Totally.
And so one time, I must have been 16 because I was already working and I had my first car. And I came home and I looked at porn on my computer before I went to work right after school. Yeah. And then I was late for work. So I hurried off. And as I was driving to work, I realized, oh, I didn't clear the browser history. Mm-hmm. And my mom usually would come home and then get on the computer.
No.
And so I like panic, and this panic of like, you know, what if I am exposed?
Totally.
What if my mom, and for me, my mom finding that would not only expose pornography in my life, but it was gay pornography,
sure,
which to me was like the bigger issue there.
Sure.
And so I hurried and ran home. When I pulled in the driveway, my mom was there, had come home from work. I walked in the house. She was down in the basement getting on the computer. And so I panicked. I grabbed some scissors. I went outside and I cut our phone line. And so then I know, right? And so I came inside and my mom was like, Brady, I can't get the internet to work. I was like, oh, I'm late for work. I'll look at it, try to fix it when I get home. And so she just made work. So I came home and I spliced the phone line back together. And so, because I was kind of
resourceful.
And so I spliced the phone line back together and it all worked. But that's what shame does to us.
Sure.
And we have our kids, like once they start down this path, like, unless you've already developed this discipleship relationship.
Totally.
And even if you have, like, their heart is working against that,
for
and
sure,
the deception is working against that. And so I think that many parents are naive in thinking, oh, if my child is struggling, they'll tell me. Or
totally,
like, we have to work so hard to develop that relationship and to give them framework for how they handle these conversations, things being pushed on them, bad images. And that's why we need to fight to protect our kids. And I think we should remove porn from libraries, and I'll probably keep harping on that.
It's like a no-brainer.
Yes. But we need to be equipping our kids and not underestimate how deceitful their hearts are, and how much shame goes on in our hearts when we are exposed to these things.
Totally. And just recognizing for us as adults, like when we cease temptation and then we continue into sin, our hearts so quickly go the same exact route.
Absolutely.
Like recognizing that if we have that, then our kids have it too. How do we train them to walk through, like you said, a framework of repentance of that and owning it? And I don't know where my wife heard this line, but if you feel like you shouldn't tell mommy and daddy, you should tell mommy and daddy.
Yes.
Like that was so helpful. Just like
that's
we use
good.
That line a lot to try to just build that into them. And we'll see. Time will tell. And God's Holy Spirit will hopefully work in them and bring faith and desire to repent and not live in the light. And I think, I mean, I'd love to hear from you. Like how did you and have you navigated the conversations about your history with your kids?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. And we really haven't gotten there yet.
Totally.
Rowan is 5. But she's going to be hearing some of this stuff because she hears me speak, right?
Totally, yeah.
And so she hears me share my story. But
yeah,
right now, like all those words are over her head.
Sure.
She doesn't know what they mean. But we're like, we won't be shielding those things from her. I know some people who, you know, don't want to share their story publicly because they don't want their kids to find out. It's like, no, like I want my kids to see me ministering to people and sharing what God's done in my life. And I think overall, we need a lot more openness with our kids to model repentance. And sometimes I think that lack of openness is still our own shame.
Oh, sure.
And we're masquerading it as, well, we want to protect our kids or we don't want to confuse our kids. Like, no, I think that's your own shame.
Sure.
Is keeping you in hiding from your kids.
Totally.
But we want to celebrate to our kids what God has done in our lives.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, with my own kids, I maybe I've gotten overboard with this, but I see so many kids with gender confusion and just where these conversations don't happen, but, no, we celebrate God made boys and God made girls and God made you different. And that's so cool.
Yeah.
And it's like, kids are so smart. It's like, you know, Rowan, like all of her stuffed animals are a mommy, a daddy, and a baby. And she organizes them into families. And she knows that, you know, babies come from a mom and a dad.
Yeah.
And we live on a farm, so where there's animals.
That's
so
true. That, you see it a different
that,
way.
That kind of helps with that aspect, even though there's awkward questions. It's like, what is that rooster doing that chicken? And you know, it's like, good question. But so we have to navigate that. But I want them to be so, to see the real creation so many times that they recognize a counterfeit.
Totally.
So that the first time they encounter a same-sex couple, they question, they know, well, that isn't right.
Totally.
And that doesn't make sense. And those two people didn't have that baby together, right?
Sure.
And so it should be so instilled in them, and we celebrate what God has made with them. And the other day, it's so funny to hear little kids talk.
Totally.
And to hear the conversations between Rowan and Ramsey. And Rowan said to Ramsey, like, Ramsey, do you want to have your own kid someday? And Ramsey's like, yeah. You could tell he was thinking,
Frosty.
Like, yeah, I guess so. And she goes, okay, we'll find you a really nice mommy to marry.
That's awesome.
And no, she knows that if you're going to have kids, there needs to be a mom and a dad.
For sure.
And you should be married. Yeah. And that's just part of it.
Like,
but then
that's good
we
design.
Want to teach them to have grace
for
also.
Sure.
And then, so that's where it comes down to, what heart are you building in your kids for sinners by how are you talking about sinners in your house?
Totally.
And I grew up in a time where it's like, you know, the unrepentant sinners were such horrible, our enemies out there.
For sure.
And then that's when you're struggling with sin, what you're picking up on is like, oh, I guess I'm the enemy, right?
Totally.
And so we want to teach them the real thing. We want them to recognize the counterfeits.
Yeah.
We want to celebrate God's design, but we also want them to have a heart for sinners.
Totally.
And
you see that in the Bible. Like when Jesus confronted sinners, his heart posture was so gentle. But when is the hypocritical Pharisees? Oh, he didn't hold back.
Yeah.
And how do we not have that same perspective to everybody?
Yes. We want them, I want my kids to grow up learning to mourn for people who have unrepentant sin, who don't know the grace of Jesus yet. And so if your kids are in, whether they're in public schools or non-public schools, wherever, it's like, that should be, I think, a posture that we should be trying to build in them of understanding these people are missing out.
Yes,
and
for sure.
So we don't condemn them for unrepentant sin or not knowing Jesus, but we know that they're missing out on the goodness and the grace and the love and God's best for them.
Forever.
And we want them to experience God's best.
Yeah. And that was one of the pieces of being in the public school. You saw kids that decided to transition and just go from sometimes really happy, kind kids to, by and large, I saw very few kids who made that transition who were just thriving. It often felt like they were
just
crushed.
And you're talking about gender transition.
Yeah,
yeah.
For sure. And so it was really helpful for me in some ways, just to be reminded of, man, in the areas that I want to sin and I'm tempted to, it's not God's best for me.
Yes.
And I'm just like them and the desires.
It's not
to,
going to lead to life
no,
and peace.
No, flourishing in
and
God's design.
Human flourishing.
Yeah. So it reminded me of a story of my son came to school with me after school to practice. And we were in the office and one of the teachers who was a man transitioned to a female, came in and his eyes locked on theirs and just started thinking. I was like, oh boy, what is going to pop out of his little mouth right now? And he said, boy, girl, boy. And it was this really like insightful, like you see it, you recognize. And I got to have a conversation with him afterwards. Like this teacher is not living according to God's word, which is sin. And they don't know Jesus. So why would we expect them to do anything else?
Yeah.
Let's pray that they would know Jesus.
Absolutely.
It was a sweet moment of like, hey, you get to see sin, but also recognize we get to love and move towards those people. And I think that was one of the struggles that I had as a teacher. There was just not enough time to try to pursue some of the other teachers that were lost. And I don't think I have many regrets of teaching in the public school, but I wish I had spent more time trying to pursue some of those other teachers that I genuinely love, care deeply about. And just, it was hard to balance that, grading tests, engaging with kids. Like,
ministering to kids, ministering to parents, navigating all this, raising your own family.
For sure. So prayer is such a good thing when we don't have the ability to do all things, nor.
But yeah. I do want to reiterate there what you said, that for the kids who did undergo some type of gender transition, you did not see them thriving. And so I mean, I've probably hit that home on this podcast before. And sometimes it starts with kids who are generally well-adjusted, but they buy into this lie. And every child has some distress in their life, right? Like being a teenager is hard. Being a human is hard. And so there's always some distress. And then they're told that this is an escape, or this will give you peace. Totally. And they want to belong somewhere.
For sure.
And it's so celebrated. They see some kids who are relatively healthy and well-adjusted buy into the lie, and you see their mental health decline and that they are not at all flourishing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. Yeah. It's so sad. And I think it's the idea that gender can be what satisfies us. It isn't. God alone can do that. And if we try to put anything, whether it's gender or whatever it may be, in the place of God, of course we're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And it's just so sad for people to not recognize that, but also such a good, compelling motivator to go and talk to them. Be like, hey, this isn't what you wanted. Can I tell you about something that is?
Absolutely. And, you know, my struggle was with sexuality and same-sex attraction, but I think if I was growing up in today's world, I would have been much more susceptible to transgender issues because that's what's being offered.
Oh, for sure.
And some of my same-sex attraction was, you know, caused by or perpetuated by just not feeling accepted by men, right?
Totally.
This gap between me and masculinity and other men.
Yeah.
And I still have to wrestle through that. It's like, especially church men. It's like, I walk into a room full of church men and they can be great, but it's like, oh gosh, I am not one of them. I don't fit in.
Totally.
I have to fight that in my heart.
For sure.
Right? For me, growing up, conversations with women came so easy and naturally. And like, I still can gravitate towards that in a room full of people, especially church people.
Sure.
It's like, you know, conversing with the women all day is so easy. And the men are just kind of dumb animals sometimes, where it's like, I just don't feel like I fit. And so I have to fight that. But thankfully, I was growing up at a time where the transgenderism just wasn't being offered. But I can see now how I would have been so susceptible because I wanted to belong somewhere.
Sure.
And I didn't connect easily with men, but I did connect easily with girls. And
the LGBT community did such a good job of welcoming people in.
Yeah.
Where I think that's a critique to us as Christians sometimes. We don't always welcome people in the same way as other communities do, which is convicting for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the sense of belonging, the you know, reason for it trying to escape, like we have answers for all of those.
Yeah.
And we should be giving people and kids a place to belong, like welcoming them and celebrating them.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, sometimes the LGBTQ community does well that we could learn some lessons by. And they're doing it sometimes. Some of them are just naive, right, and deceived.
Sure.
But some of them are, I would say, abusers and nefarious and intentionally being deceitful.
For sure.
Some of them are sheep who have been led astray, and some of them are wolves who are doing the doing the harm. And so it's always important to distinguish between that. But we as Christians, like, we should understand what are the stressors that are leading kids to believing these lies and wanting them to escape, making them feel like they need to try to belong somewhere. And we have an answer for that, which is Christ, that you are fearfully and wonderfully made and you are valued just as you are. Like, we need to be speaking that truth into our kids, whether they're our own kids or other people's kids.
Yeah. Love it. And in the church, not making masculinity this thing that it isn't biblically.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a wide range of, you don't have to just hunt and work out all the time and smoke meat. Like, there's so many other areas that God has created men to do and to be.
Sometimes I talk about having to navigate that in the church world. And sometimes the church buys into what I call faux masculinity.
Mm.
And so it's just like this machoism.
Totally.
But we feel like we're being masculine by just acting all macho, oh, and we make such a small box for that of here's the hobbies are acceptable for your masculinity. And, you know, I always push back on that. And it's like, true masculinity accomplishes the things of God, right? Takes care of the widows and the orphans and makes your community a better place and helps people to thrive.
For sure.
And so that is the lens in which I filter masculinity, not reducing it to certain hobbies interests or, you know, acting dumb with the dudes.
Totally. And what a great mission that God's given us as men to love and sacrifice our lives for the good of those around us, especially our wives, if you're married. And then to join in the mission of the Great Commission, of letting people know the beautiful message of the gospel, that we don't have identity and purpose because of things we do, but we have value because of who Christ is. And what a great journey we get to join into and do that with. And so it's good.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So you're at a place now of you are full-time investing in kids in a very different way.
Yeah.
And so we're running out of time, but in your first year as a youth pastor, what are you learning? How can parents come alongside their youth pastor? Obviously, I think that I know you have a heart that parents need to be the main discipler in their life, and you are working alongside the parents. And so what are you learning there? What do parents need to know about their kids?
Yeah, I think just investing time. It's sweet to see the way that some of the leaders of the students in our church are also parents. So they spend time with their kids, but they also invest in their kids' friends to welcome them in. And so just creating spaces for that to happen and not just always sitting around talking about the Bible, which is beautiful and good, and we should do that, but also playing airsoft or doing other things that your kids are interested in with them has been really sweet to see. And just the way that those kids respond to it, to see their friends, dads, or moms participating in the things that they love. It's been really cool to
see. That's cool. And, you know, not just expecting your kids to love your hobbies.
Oh,
and that's
sure.
great if they do. but sometimes, you know, I could talk about this all day, but the false forms of masculinity, whereas dads are kind of ashamed of different hobbies their kids have, or just take interest in, you know, that comes natural, right? One of your kids loves the same things as you, and so you naturally build into that, and you don't, but we have to be intentional about connecting our kids and maybe doing and getting involved in some of the things that they love.
So like both my wife and I are basketball players. And so watching our son not love basketball in some ways was really hard, and recognizing, this is our expectation for what we wanted him to do. That's not fair.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's so true.
Yep. And so you can be intentional about spending time with him and building hobbies that he loves and interest in connecting and discipling through all those means.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Well, Josh, I really, really appreciate this conversation, and I hope that people are encouraged by it. I hope that we're not just hammering on public schools, but we want to come alongside and love and be aware, but not live in a place of being naive and unaware.
Yeah, which is good.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having this conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Calibrate Conversations. Make sure you like this video, leave a kind comment if you would be so kind. If you listen on someplace like Spotify, leave us a 5-star review. We'd really love that. Check out calibrateministries.com for more episodes and ministry resources. Sign up for an email list on our website. We really appreciate that, so you know how to be praying for us. God is doing some great work, and we are excited to have you a part of it. Thank you.